Gentlemen, good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, July the 27th, 2017. 7:27:17. 13 minutes past 1 o'clock here, and this hour we are joined by one of my favorite guests. I believe his last visit with us was in December of last year. We always love to have him on to discuss current events, talk about anything going on in the world, get his perspective on anything, and learn about an acting career that certainly has been tremendous. Now, here's a little sidebar for you. About 2 months ago, on May 18th, you'll never believe this, this gentleman turned 95 years old. We're going to get the secrets of that over the course of this interview, but before I tell you who it is, I want you to hear this number, because I think this might give you a hint.
Lady Godiva was a freedom rider. She didn't care if the whole world looked. Joan of Arc with the Lord to guide her. She was a sister who really could. Isadora was the first bra burner, and you're glad she showed up. The country was falling apart. Betsy Ross got it all sold up.
And then there's Maud.
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 And then there's Maud. That uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing.
Right on, Maud.
And then there's Bill Macy. Bill, how are you?
God'll get you for that.
Bill, when you hear that song, what do you think about?
I just love it. It keeps me alive. I watch it every Friday night here in California. It reruns on channel 1258 on Spectrum TV, and I see some of the old shows that were done from 72 to 78, and sometimes I can't remember that I looked that young. Because, like you just said, when you spoke to your audience, I'm 95, but not an old 95. I'm still an energetic 95. I hope you can get that from the sound that I'm making on your show right now.
You sound perfect, Bill. Well, we can go either way here. Let's go to 95. How do you get to be 95?
Well, I stopped eating improperly. So, for instance, I'll have maybe, well, this morning, in anticipation of talking to you, I had a can of lentil soup. I just opened up the can, put it in a small pot, and let it get a little warm, and I ate it, in anticipating of talking to you, because you're, where are you right away?
We're here in Ohio, Columbus, near Columbus.
In Columbus, right. I married a girl from Cleveland way back in 19, gee, it's so far away, I forget. But anyway, and then I will have maybe a baked potato and maybe a strip of bacon, and then maybe I'll have a salad. I don't eat like the normal person eats, and I've lost about 35 pounds in the last 5 years. I used to be 185. I'm now 150, and I just try to get enough sleep. I go to bed early, 10:30. I got up around 7:30 this morning, you know. And I just don't do anything special, and I'm just trying to stay alive until I die, you know?
Well, that's a good way to do it. When I think of Maud, it's hard to believe, but it's you and Adrienne Barbeau, the last two remaining cast members.
Yeah, Adrienne is about 69 or 68. She was around 25 or 26 in 1972, and she played Carol, the daughter, as your audience knows. And she has three boys. She has twins from William, I forget William's last name, but and then another young gentleman from the director. I can't remember all of the names. I will say, being 95, I can't remember what I used to remember when I was 50 or 35 or 15. So I admit it, though.
Well, that's okay. That's all there is to it. All you got to do is admit your shortcomings at 95.
That's right. Yeah. I have many, by the way.
I don't believe it.
You'll hear them during our interview. By the way, Scott, I'm so happy to talk to you and your audience, because I hope this brings sort of a message of hope to all people who are listening, because I'm a lover of people, and I really appreciate the individuality of each person, male, female, transgender. It doesn't make any difference to me. I threw that in because of what the president said yesterday, you know.
Well, Bill, here's a question, and we'll go there. Of course, for people who maybe are living in a cave, yesterday President Trump announced that transgender people will no longer be allowed in the Army, military. You know, a lot of people say, well, that's just something that people from a different generation don't understand. Well, Bill, you've got about 25 years on the president. How did you become so evolved on this issue?
What was that word you used? So what? So what?
How did you evolve to decide that transgender people are okay to have in the Army?
Oh, evolve. You see, that was the word you used?
That was
evolve?
The word, yes, that was it.
Okay, listen to this. I believe that the Homo sapien, which is a fancy Latin word for people, are equal in the eyes of our Lord. And it doesn't make any difference politically, economically, or any kind of word that I could possibly use to denigrate any person. They're all equal, and it doesn't make any difference what color they are. It doesn't make any difference who they are. They are all equal. And then to have somebody come along and say they're unequal for the various reasons that they'll use, whether it's money or prejudice or whatever, well, that's what their opinion is, but my opinion is that everybody is equal in the eyes of our Lord. And the president of our country, President Trump, he has the right, because he's the president, to say what he wants to say. I disagree because he's using economic reasons why they should be not permitted to be in the service of our country. So it's completely alien to me how this gentleman is making his point. That's all I have to say about that.
A lot of people felt very strongly, Bill, especially where you live, in the state you live, out in California, about the last election. What was your feeling when election time was going on last November?
Well, I thought it was bizarre that, but then again, my response goes like this. Many people, most likely, in my opinion, were dissatisfied with the status quo that had happened for the last 10, 20, 30 years. Nothing was really exciting and happening, and people weren't doing well economically. So therefore, when this gentleman came along and said he's going to change things, and he attracted many, many voters, and he became the president. And he's doing what he said he would do. He's just a, I would use the word bizarre in contrast to normal. And so now we're going to be under his guidance for the next 3 or 4 years. And then we'll see what goes on. But I personally look at it as knowing that our country existed from the 1500s, 1600s, and it's going to go on for a long time until the weather will change our country, which is when you see the icebergs way up in the North Pole falling into the water and so on. But we're going to be here for quite a while. I'm so happy that you're here and your audience is here and I'm here. And, you know, it's just great to be alive, great to be talking. And now ask me some more questions.
Well, Bill, this is interesting. I did not know this. But this station, WWGH, are the call letters. The call letters stand for Warren G. Harding because we're in the city where he was born.
How about that?
Who was president when you were born?
Well, I guess it was Hoover.
Harding.
Harding?
Harding.
In 1922?
He was president until 23.
Yeah.
Now, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
So you've been around since President Harding. Which president did you most admire in your life?
Well, Delano Roosevelt was the one that I was conscious of because he was the president in the early 30s, and I was about 10 to 12 to 14 in my age thing. And so I was conscious of our country's leadership at that time, and I enjoyed him.
A lot of people... who was the worst? Who was the worst in your lifetime? Who did you not like?
As a president?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think I could go there, because I don't have those kinds of thoughts. You know, I'm sort of square. Scott.
Yes.
In my answers to your questions, I don't mind your questions, by the way. Like, your questions ask me who's the best and who's the worst. I think of the word denigrate right now, because I don't denigrate anything on the planet, because it's just fortunate or unfortunate that certain things exist. Now, I know there's a terrible thing happening in different parts of the world, like there's war in different countries, and we have our soldiers helping out and so on and so forth. It's unfortunate, but I don't know what hate is in my body. I don't have any hate. So therefore, I cannot say that I hate any president that we had. I'm maybe dissatisfied with different existences and occurrences and so on. By the way, I'm listening to me while I'm talking to you, and I'm saying, how the hell did I become an actor? Because I don't sound like any kind of a professor. I'm just sounding like a guy from Brooklyn. By the way, that's where I grew up. You know that.
Yeah, I do know that.
Yeah. And so I appreciate the fact that you're asking me anything that you prefer to ask me, but my response is like I'm an average Joe. I was very fortunate to be a waltzer on Maud, and I did that for 6 years, and then I did a bunch of other stuff after that. But I will confess that I'm not intellectually astute. How about that? I used that fancy word.
It's right there with Evolve from earlier on in the interview, so it works okay. You know, Bill, something that fascinates me. I've interviewed some people from Brooklyn, and a lot of them use the phrase, I left Brooklyn, but Brooklyn never left me.
Oh, that's nonsense.
Okay, why do people... How did it change for you?
Look, I don't... Look, I'll give you a joke about Brooklyn. You ready for
it? I'm ready for it.
You know how they do CPR in Brooklyn?
How's that?
Hey, get the hell up!
Well...
I mean, come on, you know, you just grow up. We used to sit on the stoop or on a bench when we were kids, a bunch of us, and we didn't know what we were going to do when we grew up. You know, we were just plain old kids and grew up in Brooklyn. And then what happened, the service took me in 1942. I went in 47. I was discharged, and I was walking the streets of Manhattan not knowing what to do. And I see this sign. I don't know how I got into this. Is it okay to continue
on? Go right ahead.
And the sign said, act now, one flight up. I went up, and it was an acting school. And so the guy came out from a room in there, and he said, are you a GI? I said, yes. He said, look, you come to the school, the government will pay for you under the GI Bill, and then you'll know what it is. So my mother gave me 20 cents every morning. I went from Brooklyn to Manhattan for a dime, and then came home for a dime. And this is 1947, I guess. And 2 months later, into the school, the guy comes out. He calls me into his office, and he says, I owe him $200. I said, the government doesn't want to pay you because you had no prior experience as an actor, so therefore you owe me $200. I said, I don't have a nickel. He kicked me out of school. I could go to college, though, because I was a high school graduate. So I ended up going to NYU, and as soon as I walked into class, the professor made me a stage manager because I was older than anybody else who came from high school. 4 years later, I graduated and went up the next day. I went to 60th Street in Manhattan and I got myself a job as a cab driver. And then I drove a cab for 12 years, and in the middle of that work situation, I found a script in the back seat, took it to the producer, got myself a job as Walter Matthau's understudy in 1958. And then in 1968, I read that he's going to do a movie called Awake and Sing by Clifford Odets. And I had just done that play off Broadway for $60 a week. And so I told my agent in New York to call California. And it was a lucky coincidence that the casting agent for the movie was the same casting agent for Norman Lear. And he called and he said, Mr. Macy would like to be with Walter Matthau. And she said, well, his Hollywood agent said that he's out on the road with Julie Harris. And he said, he's sitting right here in my office. So she says, send him out to California. We'll put him to work with B. Arthur. That's how that all happened.
You know, it's fascinating, Bill. When you got a script, let's say Walter Finley, this is a character that you are going to be. Who was he to you? How was he described?
What's the actual question, Scott?
Yeah, who was Walter Finley? If you had
he,
to just,
he was me.
He was, that's Bill Macy.
I can't act.
Well, I don't think that's true, Bill.
No, I just learned the lines every night. We went in every day, and by the second or third day, we were off book. And we were then walking around and rehearsing off book. And so it wasn't acting. It was talking to each other about what the lines provided the action. It's no secret. Everybody can do what is called acting. You just have to learn your lines. Now, Laurence Olivier in England, perhaps he was an actor and doing all kinds of Shakespearean stuff and roles that were beyond his actually. But I just was myself.
Was
Bea Arthur was a fantastic actress because she propelled, I don't know where she got her gumption from, but she was unbelievable. Oh, by the way, you want to hear a little fancy story about how B and I got along?
Yeah, go ahead.
I came out here in 72, and there was a delicatessen called The Bagel on Fairfax near Olympic, and every Friday we used to tape our show. So she'd be in makeup around 11, 12 o'clock, and I had, instead of going to work immediately, I went and stopped at the Bagel and got a hot pastrami on rye and brought it to her at makeup. And she looked at it, and then she said, Oh, Bill, I love you, Bill. And she loved hot pastrami.
Well,
I did that for 6 years.
Bill, you said Bea Arthur was a good actress. So how different was Bea Arthur from Maude?
What do you mean by that?
Well,
she was Maude.
Was that how Bea Arthur was in person, kind of a forceful...
No.
Okay.
No, she's normal, like, you know, like you and I are having a conversation right now. If Bea was here, and she's here in our imagination, she would be talking to you sensibly and properly and so on and so forth. Then if you gave her a script to do Maude, which is a character... Well, then she would look at the text and see that it is asking for different aspects of her imagination. And so that's how she did and performed that character. Well, that's how actors work. You know, you look at your material, and it sort of it elicits from you. I have to look in my brain. I have to come up with a word like elicit. I haven't use that word maybe in 50 years. But it talks to you, and then you try to put it together, and you try to make it natural. That's one of the interesting things about acting, you know.
You know, I remember the most people probably in their mind the abortion episode of Maude sticks out, but the one I remember is the one where Walter finds out he's an alcoholic.
You know what we did on that show, which was so painful to me, because we rehearsed without hitting her. She said, "Please don't hit me in the ear because I don't want to have a broken eardrum." So I rehearsed with a swing and stopped short of her cheek, and we rehearsed it many, many, many times. And then in the time when I had to hit her, I wasn't thinking as we're talking right now. I just lashed out at her based upon the motivation in the text. And as soon as I hit her, which I had never done before in my life, oh my God, I broke down. I couldn't believe it. It was like, oh. And she was strong enough to try to help me and say, "Walter, we're going to try to help you." Man. See, that wasn't acting. That was real.
Well, and for those who have not seen the episode, Walter slaps Maude when she's trying to question him on his alcoholism, and it's a tremendous scene.
Yes, it is.
Bill, what is it like to go from driving a cab to being famous all over the United States, top 10 television series?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, Scott, it's a pleasure that you and I get together every so often. Because you ask me the questions that enable me to give you truthful answers.
Well, I appreciate that.
The guy that drove the cab was a guy from Brooklyn who had to make a living. I made $20 a day from 1972. I graduated college in 1954, got the cab, and I worked 12 years till 1966 driving the cab. And I got $13 a day commissions at that time. The dollar was a different value. And I made $7 a day in tips. So I got about a 15-cent tip. A guy from Brooklyn would give you a quarter. A guy from Park Avenue would give you 15 cents. Anyway, I was driving during the day in 1966 called America Hurrah, and Jean-Claude Vanatali, the playwright, came back to me one night, and he said, "Bill, you're very tired on stage. How come?" I said, "I'm driving a cab during the day." He said, "I can't have you do that. You have to devote all your energy to this show." So he said, "I'm going to go to the producer and get you a raise." So he went to the producer. He came back in 10 minutes, and he said, "She'll give you a $10 raise if you stop driving the cab." Well, I looked at him. I said, "You're asking me to give up 100 for 10. He said, "Yes." I said, "I'll take it." That was the last time I drove the taxi, and I put a lot of energy into the part in America Hurrah. People saw me, including Mr. Lear, et cetera, and so on. And that led towards coming out here to California. So, but it was the same guy. I'm not any different than the guy that was driving the cab. I wasn't any different. In fact, oh, my God, I'm going to make a confession to you, even though I'm on the radio. They had a reading of the first episode. And there must have been 30, 40 people in the room. And after we did the reading, my God, I didn't know I was going to confess this. Mr. Lear said, "Does anybody have anything to say?" And I stood up and I said, "It's the worst thing I've heard in my life. You've made Walter sound like Archie Bunker. I'm a kid from Brooklyn My name is Walter Finley. I'm not Archie Bunker. And they looked at me like, who the hell are you to tell us how to do our work? But in the meantime, they changed the script, and they made me be Walter rather than Archie Bunker. You know what I'm talking about, All in the Family?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So the original idea for Maude's husband was to be more like Archie Bunker.
Well, that may have been their idea, but I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to be me.
When you, at that point, because this is fascinating to me, when Maude is on the air, there were only four television channels at that time. It's one of the top five television shows on television. When you would go out in public, how did people react to you?
Well, one guy smacked me on the back so hard that I almost broke my God, he was like so enthusiastic. He saw Walter, he saw me. He gave me a smack on the back. I said, wow, holy moly, wow. I mean, I didn't like that at all.
Well, did people, were they asking for autographs? Was it always a good experience?
No, it was always a good experience.
It was.
I get the mail now to the people find out my address, and they ask me for autographs, pictures, and so on and so forth. And I love to do things like that because I appreciate the public because they're looking at the reruns now. And it's still entertaining contrasted to some of the shows that are on now. I'm not going to denigrate or criticize anything that is on because everybody's just trying to do the best that they can. And my relationship with the public has been very pleasant, very fascinating. And I'm in love with the people. I'm in love with the universe. I'm in love with grass, with insects, with the Big Bang theory. I'm just a little nut. I'll go to my grave without an answer to all of this. By the way, that's the only sad thing about my existence. There's no answer to how we all got here and how we treat each other and so on and so forth.
You have been here now for 95 years. What, you told us the answers that you don't have. What have you learned? What is the most important thing you've learned in 95 years?
Respect. Did you hear what I said?
I did. In what way? Of others, of yourself?
Everybody. You must respect everybody. You have to respect the animals, too. We have, my wife, Samantha, feeds two feral cats morning and night. And they come to the back door, and she feeds them. Every so often, she opens the door, they let them in the house. They run around, and they run out because they're not domesticated. They were born wild. You have to respect not only... You have to respect everybody in the world. I walk up to strangers. This is part of my persona. I learned a story in Spanish. And I see a guy that looks Spanish, and I ask him, do you speak Spanish? Are you Mexican or Spanish? And he says, yes. And I tell him a story in Spanish just to be able to converse with somebody that I never met in my life. I don't expect to see him anymore. But I like to share the story that I know, and I like the way to tell. I can't tell it to you on the radio because it has a little naughtiness to it, but that's what I like to do because I just love, it's not only an abstract thing that I'm talking to you, Scott, about loving people and respecting people. I actually have intrinsic belief that each of us has to be respected just because they do exist.
It's a fascinating thing. And in your career after Maude, you were in a very popular movie that is still seen today, The
Which
Jerk.
One?
The Jerk with Steve
Martin.
Oh,
I love The Jerk. Damn these glasses!
Now, did you think that was going to be a hit when you were making it? What did you think of Steve Martin?
I love him. What a talented guy. A very different guy. And what a banjo player.
Isn't he, though?
My God, a champion. You know, you're asking me these questions, and you're giving me the opportunity to admire all of the people. I just used the word respect because we were talking in a proper adult tone. But with for enthusiasm, so many people got so many variations of their talents. They don't have to be in show business to be talented and to be loved because of who they are and what they do. I mean, the world is a marvelous wonder.
Absolutely. You know, Bill, I was just thinking, the way you started this interview, God will get you for that. Of course, that was B's big popular line on Mod. How did that come about? Was that just in the script?
Yes, everything was in the script. I mean, those gentlemen that wrote the script under Norman Lear's guidance, they would speak, if they were being interviewed by you, they would be very, very adult, and they would answer your questions with their experience and so on and so forth, because they came from different sources, you know. And you're talking to a guy from Brooklyn. I appreciate the fact. I don't even question why you call me, even though I was on the Maud Show plus other things that I've done, movies and television and so on. The fact that you call me is an honor. And it gives me the opportunity to talk, with your permission, to your audience. And I'm trying to actually influence your audience by telling them through your radio station to love and respect others. It's what we carry with us moment to moment in our life, and we take it right to the grave with us.
You know, Bill, you've given a confession in this interview, and I'll confess one now. One of the reasons that I like having you on, even if it's not a straight interview like you might do with an actor, you know, where were you born, tell me about your favorite job, even though it's not like that, because you are an interesting guest. You're an interesting person, and we don't have to have, I don't have notes in front of me. We're just talking, and a lot of people, for some reason, can't do that on radio. I think we could do 30 shows and never run out of things to talk about. And that's what makes you a great guest, and not everybody is.
Wow. I appreciate what you just said.
Well, it's the absolute truth. And you know, for radio, and this is just God-given for you, you have a unique voice.
Really?
You really do.
It sounds like Brooklyn, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little. Well, yeah, I would consider that, but you also speak very intelligible. And that comes across. And, you know, voices are important. I'm sure you remember in the old radio days, everybody had a distinct voice. Ronald,
that's true.
You knew everybody's voice.
Yeah.
And you know Bill Macy's voice. It's very distinct. And I'm not to criticize acting nowadays, but it almost seems like everybody's working in the same voice.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. I don't know what it all look alike. They all shop at a suit store.
Well, I don't know what to say to what you just said.
Well, I'm just glad you keep coming on, and we'll keep going on, because a lot of people remember you, Bill, from doing the guest spots on Seinfeld, which was a gigantically popular show. What was it like to work on Seinfeld?
What was the name of the show?
Seinfeld.
What's that? I don't get it.
Did you work on Seinfeld? Jerry Seinfeld show?
Seinfeld.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I only did one show, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And I was running this meeting in which we were trying to have Seinfeld's father get out of the condominium. Well, I was just playing Sveen. It wasn't hilarious or comedic for me, but we watch Seinfeld every night at home, the reruns. And that group of four people are fantastic actors and hilarious. And the writing was fantastic. It was a pleasure to just be asked to go on and play that little role that I did play. And they're all professional. They all learn their lines. They all do their work. And that was one of the nice things about being in this business called show business. You came across lovely people who were interested in doing the work that they have chosen to do. And then to be asked to join a group of that caliber, that made me feel very good, and just thinking about it makes me feel very good.
As well it should. And Bill, another interesting thing, a lot of people in the 2000 age started to see you show up on television at these poker televised tournaments. How did that all come about?
I play poker every day.
What is it about that game?
Well, the game is attractive to me because I'm not working.
That'll
like
do
if
it.
If I could be in a show, I would prefer to go to learn lines and to do the imaginative things that the writers have given us to do. But nobody's calling a 95-year-old guy to do anything. So I get up every morning, have breakfast, get in the car, get a blessing from my wife every morning. In fact, she's walking around the house while I'm doing this interview, and she blesses me come home safely, be well, and play better cards. And I come home before it gets dark, because my eyesight is a little different than today than it was when I was younger. And I go to there's half a dozen casinos here in Los Angeles, or different cities near Los Angeles. And I play a small game just to keep myself occupied, and get thrown out of some casinos when I make too much noise, and some casinos welcome me, and it gives me an activity. And then when I come home, I do the chores to straighten out the house a little bit before I go to bed, and then just do it over and 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 over again. I'm taking advantage of your generosity.
No, it's good. Now, Bill, when were you ever thrown out of a casino?
Oh, a couple of times they threw me out of the Hustler because I sneezed loudly. And the manager said, please go home for a day or two. That's not the way we want you here. Another time, let's see what happened this other time. I don't know if I used profanity or something like that. Maybe I was asked to leave. Yeah, that's what I was. Another time I was talking about an actress to a friend sitting at the table, and the manager walked by. It was talking about a James Bond movie, and James Bond had a girlfriend with a name that was unique, and I mentioned that girl's name, and the manager says, go home, because he didn't understand what I was talking about. Yeah.
You know,
I get into a little verbal trouble and so on. I don't mind, and I love to drive because I used to drive a cab, as you know. And so I drive to a different casino.
You know,
and I stay 2 or 3 hours there. The thing that drives me crazy in all the casinos, though, is the announcement of the initials of the new person that wants to play a different game. Samantha!
I'll get it.
And so the announcements are so loud. I spoke to a fellow named Dave Fisk yesterday, who's a person that's managing over at the Commerce Casino yesterday, and he says the owners of the casino want it loud so that the people can hear their initials. But I said, what about the other 300 or 400 people that have to listen to hundreds and hundreds of these announcements? He said, well, that's part of the game. And so I just left the casino. I can't handle that. That's too much.
There's two questions I want to get in here. And the first one is, I guess I understand to a certain degree the whole issue maybe with profanity. But how can you sneeze so loud to get thrown out of a casino?
Well, the manager was sensitive, and she just... hey, honey. Scott just asked me about how we sneeze so loud that I could get thrown out of the casino.
Oh, yeah.
You should hear my wife sneeze. You just sneeze. It's one of the loudest sneezes. Instead of a sneeze like this, it's a sneeze like this. Ha! And so you get thrown out.
I understand. Now, here's where I want to spend our last 5 minutes, Bill. Why? Listen, your mind is there. Your brain is there. You could retain words without question. Why aren't they calling you? What is this going on where you, if you want to work, you should be able to?
There's a word called millennial. You've heard the word?
I have heard that word.
And so I asked my agent, what does that mean? He says, well, people born in the 80s and 90s. And he says, those are the people that are working now. They don't use people like you.
But, I'm thinking to myself, somebody like Betty White. She's a little younger than, or a little older, a couple months.
Yeah, but she's different. She's got a better career, and she's been famous all her life. Unfortunately, her husband died early, as we all know. And I never met her, but I respect what she does because she always looks delightful on television.
Well, is there... So do you get any scripts anymore? Does the agent ever...
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Well, you did a few movies about 10 years ago, a couple Christmas movies that were pretty good.
Oh, Surviving Christmas, that Carl Reiner put me into. I keep on getting fan mail from playing Doodah in that movie, yeah. Well, Carl Reiner liked me, and Mel Brooks liked me. He called me a couple of times, and he used me in a couple of movies. In fact, he used me in my first movie. Did you remember the movie called The Producers with Zero Mostel?
I do.
Gene Wilder. So I was doing America Hurrah with John Claude Bonatelli. That's when we had that talk about where he asked me to leave the taxi driving. And so... I had a great role in that play off Broadway, in which I choked on a chicken bone for 7 minutes, and people were screaming, "Get him a doctor! He's dying!" And this and that, and so on and so forth. In the meantime, Mel came back, and he said, "There was no curtain call on this off Broadway show," so he came back and said, "Oh, I'm doing a movie and it's cast, but I'll look for something for you. Is that okay with you?" I said, "Of course." And his casting person called a couple of days later and said, "Would you play the foreman of the jury, a one-line part?" And I said, "Sure." So he gave me $200. That was 1966. In that movie, Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder were simply brilliant. But I was happy just to go to work. And the judge finally says to me, "How do you?" There's a trial, and how do you find? And he said my one line. I think I was a little scared or uptight. I was a little frightened, I think, because I looked at it in the past. And I said, "We find the defendant incredibly guilty." That was my introduction to show to movies in the business.
Bill, what's it like to watch yourself on camera?
It's like somebody else. Really, I can't even... When I look at the shows Friday night, when I watch the 3 episodes of Maud, I don't even remember. I can't remember I even looked that way with a strange black mustache and black hair and yelling and screaming and criticizing the acting. My wife says, "Shut up! Just watch the show and enjoy it."
Bill,
I met my wife Samantha in that Broadway musical called Oh Calcutta. Do you know about that?
Oh,
don't you?
I do know about that. A very there was a scene in there where the cast gets naked.
Well, what do you mean a scene? We had eight scenes in which we were clothed, and four scenes in which we were nude. In the nude scenes, we were just walking around with music and so on and so forth. And in the clothed scenes, we were using profanity and so on. And the producer, the English producer, his point was that the human person, if he didn't open his mouth, was gorgeous, but as soon as he started to speak, he was vulgar. In the meantime, people came to the show with binoculars.
Here's a question, Bill. If somebody came to you today and said, listen, I've got, it's a new play, I want you to be in it, here's $200, would you do it? Does the money matter?
No, I would do it.
You would do it?
Yeah, I would do it because I would go to the theater instead of the casino.
And here's my final question, Bill. When people look back at Maude, because it's still running and it's going to run forever, how do you want them to look back on Bill Macy, the work?
Oh, in a friendly way, that's all, you know.
Well, Bill, here's my ending on the 50 minutes we've spent together. I can't believe it's been 50 minutes. As I said in this interview, you are a great interview. I always like when you're on. I hope we can do it more often, maybe a regular thing, because I enjoy it. And anybody who can choke on a chicken bone and sneeze so loud you get kicked out of a casino is tops in my book.
I love you, Scott.
Bill, I love you too. You stay well, and we'll talk soon.
All right,
bye-bye. The legendary Bill Macy from Maude. And that's it. We didn't leave time for the calls, but we'll try to get to those tomorrow. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
How you have all this audio?
Oh, you're impressed by this.
Well, what do you do? Just tape it, tape the shows as they go. But you're going back 10 years now, or maybe longer in certain cases.
Charles, when you were on, I made sure to tape it.
Where are you from originally?
Right.